Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cloak and Dagger podcast and to part two of our tale of the Anarchy. If you haven't listened to part one, you should probably stop and go back and listen to that. Otherwise, none of this is going to make any sense. Now, let's dive back in. Take it away, past me. So, back to our tale. We have Matilda over the channel and Stephen.
Stephen is our king. Really? Nice. If you'd like it or not, Stephen is king.
He is king.
It doesn't get off to a good start.
Okay.
So, Scotland, King David of Scotland, they start causing a lot of trouble. Allegedly in support of his niece, who was our Matilda.
Ah, okay, right.
But we all know that he likes to take advantage of a situation.
Just any chaos, yeah.
Pretty much. And he does quieten down a bit after a few negotiations and is actually given Carlisle and Cumbria.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just to calm down.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So this is a period of time where we have the Battle of the Standard in 1138, and no one's actually really sure who wins, because although the English forces, but with apparently no support from Stephen, managed to repel the Scots, in the negotiations afterwards, there's so much land given away. They're like, well, hang on a minute.
Sorry, yeah, we won. Yeah. Why are we giving you land?
I mean, you don't know how much they would have to have given if they lost. Like, it could have been all of the north had been banished, and they're like, okay, we'll just give you these things.
So Stephen's wife, his queen, I'm really sorry, is also called Matilda.
So that's third Matilda we have?
fourth
Matilda we have?
I'm really sorry. She's often known as Matilde, so we can call her Matilde for ease, if that's helpful. She is also David of Scotland's niece.
Okay, so he has two nieces called Matilda.
Yeah, so are the two Matildas, Matilde and Matilda, are first cousins through their mothers.
Right.
So this cousins war is just getting even
all
more...
All cousins.
It's very incestuous. Yeah. It's like a load of snakes in a pit.
So Stephen has had to deal with the Scots. The Welsh are also having a bit of a party as well, because, of course, you know, why not? There's a bit of insecurity in England. Mm-hmm. Let's take advantage of that, and fair play to them, quite frankly.
Yeah, go on, Welsh.
Yeah. He also alienates a lot of the leading churchmen, because he promised to allow them more autonomy in their appointments, and he just starts giving away really key offices to his family and his friends.
Mm.
He alienates a lot of nobles by giving away what they think is their right and giving their claims to land and castles and titles to his family and friends.
Right.
So it's really not setting him up particularly well. But the really big doozy is he alienates a chap called Robert of Gloucester, who until previously in Henry I's court was an incredibly powerful individual.
Right, okay.
And he sort of sees himself in the role as a consul. He happens to be one of Henry's illegitimate children.
Oh, so he can do whatever he wants, can't he? He's just kind of almost ordained.
So there's actually a point where he's approached and people say, don't you think you ought to be king, actually?
Really?
Yeah, but he was very worried about the illegitimacy sort of claim, and knowing how difficult it had been for William the Conqueror and everything after that, he didn't even think about it.
And from Stephen's perspective, right, you've got someone who is of the king, the previous king's blood. He's a powerful lord.
Mm.
Get him on side. Don't try and trash him and put in someone that you can control.
I mean, you know, I get the reason, there is reasons to put your own people in important positions of power, but then, yeah, you've got, there's people you need to please as well. And I guess he would be the main one. And actually, if you get him, the other grumblings probably doesn't matter as much, because if you get a really big important figure who is the direct line to the king that you don't have, that fixes any problem you've got.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't.
No, and Robert doesn't really make any noise when Stephen becomes king either. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't really make a big fuss. And I think he was sort of thinking, well, so long as I can continue being quite influential and quite powerful, that's absolutely fine.
Okay.
When Stephen starts to just alienate him and just not listen to him, that's when he switches back and goes, actually, I remember my oath to my father. I'm going to declare for Matilda.
Wow. So he's the first.
He's the first one to go.
What
over.
A guy.
And that's a big one to have.
Big Bob. Like him.
Yeah. And actually, had he not done that, I don't think we'd be telling this tale.
No.
Really?
No, he's such an integral part of the whole anarchy. And you do sort of wonder if he hadn't been around. I just don't think.
He's the trigger point. Or if Stephen had kept it on side.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
He's Queenmaker.
Yeah. Is he older than Matilda?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. So she's recovered from her third pregnancy. It's all gone well.
Okay.
We've now got Henry, Geoffrey, Junior and William.
William, so third boy.
Exactly.
She's doing very well.
She's doing very well.
Yeah. So then she leaves her husband and her three sons behind in Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
And she and Robert go and invade England.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So he goes and gets her and then returns with an army?
Mm-hmm. So they've got about 3,000 infantry.
Right.
They've got about 140 knights.
Very good.
And knowing that Stephen is pretty much just expecting them now, they don't go for any of the more sort of prominent parts of the country. They land in West Sussex.
Right.
And make their way to Arundel Castle.
Okay.
And that's actually held by that lovely Adeliza of Louvain, who is the Dowager Queen.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. She's absolutely fine. She's remarried. She's had lots of children.
Oh,
so,
she has.
Yeah, so she's absolutely loving life.
So Henry probably just had a bit of an issue at the end of his life. Just
I think he'd sown all the wild oats he could.
Yeah, he's had enough, I think. I mean, he's 55 and he's done a good job. He's probably tired at that point.
So Adeliza is a supporter of Matilda then?
So she lets her into the castle. It's a little bit awkward for her husband, who's the first Earl of Arundel, who is a supporter of Stephen. Ooh. But the way they get around this is by saying that she's just a guest. So Robert, rather than staying with Matilda, he goes off to his power base in Bristol. Mm-hmm. To start sort of establishing more controls and really laying out the campaign for what they want. So Matilda is in Arundel Castle with her stepmother,
yes,
as was, and her family. And Stephen, about a week later, marches in and goes, right, hand her over.
Right.
You've got to hand her over. You know, I can't have her running around the country doing this. This is ridiculous. But Adeliza just turns around and goes, she's just a guest. She's not here to do anything.
Yeah.
And he can't prove that.
I just invited her over for tea.
Yeah, yeah.
Has the army gone with Robert?
Yes.
Right, so she's literally...
She's got some, obviously, quite a nice retinue with her, you know, of knights and servants and almost like a little mini court.
Yeah. Okay. But they're in a castle. Like, it's pretty well, and they don't have cannons, so that's a pretty defensible position. They can't... Stephen can't drag her out.
No, and that's the big thing. He cannot drag her out. Mm. It's really bad PR.
Yes.
You've got a princess of the royal bloods. Mm-hmm. You've got a dowager queen. Mm. Basically, there's only two women in there that he's sort of seeing in any sort of power.
Yeah.
He can't just go in and sort of drag them out by the hair and go, right, you come with me, you know, that's enough.
Especially his position of not having a direct connection to the previous king, and these are the two main women in the king's life.
Yeah.
Like, he has to maintain the look of being regal and being fair and everything. He can't just attack these two women.
No.
And I love Matilda going, well, I'm just over here.
I'm just doing some tea.
Calm down.
Yeah.
God.
So it gets a bit awkward because Adeliza's husband's like, you know, this is going to escalate. It's not going to stay like this forever.
I really like him in the middle of everything because obviously he probably has a lot less power than most husbands in relationships.
He's babe.
Jesus Christ, I can't deal with this. I don't know how I'm going to survive any of this.
Yeah. Especially they're in bed, like putting on their eye mask. It's like, could you consider handing her over in the morning? Shut up, I'm reading.
Yeah.
Babe, come on, the king's literally outside the gates. Just hand her over. So that's not what happens. Although Adeliza does feel a little bit of pressure and it's said that she is so overwhelmed by the presence of the king, you know, that she starts to think, oh gosh, what have I done? I don't believe that for a second.
No.
But the solution that comes up that is suggested to Stephen so he can save face and also still retain power is to let Matilda go.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. To seem like gracious.
To seem gracious, allow her safe passage to Bristol. So that she's
to Bristol places
with Robert. Now, right. The main argument being that then there's only one power there. They're not two enemies running around England separate in a pincer movement.
Keep them in one place.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So it's easier to watch them, easier to keep an eye on them.
So yeah, because officially the war, there hasn't been a war.
No,
like,
no.
She hasn't claimed the throne.
There's no declaration
yet. She's just come home and is just chatting with people.
Having tea with her stepmom.
That's very interesting.
It's very delicate.
Yes.
If she declared, then he would have reason to kill her.
Mm. Oh, that's kind of really smart, actually, in the fact that he can't... And he's not got control of her. He can't force her to swear allegiance to him because he can't be too aggressive to her. And because she hasn't declared anything, the fight hasn't started yet. It's quite clever.
And this is also a time where it's really up in the air because they both have sent envoys to the Pope.
Right, okay.
With their claim.
So she's kind of starting to
Matilda,
make
yeah, she wanted to make it more legal. So she sent an envoy to the Pope, sort of putting forward her claim. And Stephen also sent an envoy to argue against that claim and sort of put forward his claim. And basically Pope Innocent II just couldn't find either way.
Mm.
So just sort of thought, if I don't say anything, the status quo will just remain and it'll be fine.
Mm.
Because there's all this sort of talk about Matilda's mum being a nun, you know, which was ridiculous. So therefore she was illegitimate. None of that could stand. That's actually been already through the courts.
Right, okay.
You know, years and years ago. so innocent because he just didn't do anything. Couldn't declare either way.
God, useless.
But the envoys aren't back yet. So there's also this going on. So right. They're sort of almost sort of retaining this weird, polite situation
they're
between
the
two of them.
They're waiting to hear what the Pope
says. Exactly, before they do anything.
And they're waiting for a message that just says nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably a very long-winded bit of parchment.
I mean, the Pope feels like he could sort this out.
It'll essentially say, God will find a way.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's it. That's kind of where they're at the minute. It's almost like a stalemate,
right,
in a way. So she gets to Bristol, and essentially just starts laying claim to things and power. And she does start declaring because coins start being minted in her name with her image on them.
Big part.
Yeah.
She's sort of passively becoming queen. Mm-hmm. She's just there.
Yeah.
And therefore things should happen because she's queen, but she's not outright declaring war.
Is she waiting for him to strike first to give her a reason to strike back?
She seems to be staying a lot in Gloucester, just to try and get more support and win more people over to their cause and just consolidate the power that she has.
Okay.
So by 1140, when they start to try and have peace talks, which are just so pointless, it's ridiculous, she has control of the southwest.
Wow.
The entire southwest. In comparison, Stephen does have a lot more of the country. He's got some of the southeast, he's got the Midlands, he's got the north, just about, with David knocking on the door most of the time. But that's kind of where they're at. And this,
and the southwest is still like the richer part of the kingdom. Like, it's not as it's, I mean, he's got a lot more, and I suppose it's more about claims, but it's a powerful base to have, and to have Bristol and to have the southwest. Yeah,
and she's got a lot of access to the coast as well.
Yes,
actually, Snow's Hill, Sudley, all that area, that was the front line at one point. So
was
right
it?
Right through the Cotswolds. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
no way.
So a little bit later on, so we're pushing forward a little bit here, all the way along that area, you have got what's called adulterine castles being built. And they're adulterine because they have no consent from any royal authority to be built.
Oh.
But they're being flung up really quickly to act as defences all the way along that line.
By people just in the area who are like,
exactly,
something's going to happen. We need some castles.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got people who just take advantage of the situation.
Nice.
So in 1140, just before all the Christmas festivities, Lincoln Castle had a couple of visitors.
Okay.
And you've got the Countess of Chester.
Right.
And her sister.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to visit the wife of the castellan of Lincoln Castle. And it's all very lovely. Again, I'm sure more beverages, mead were, exchanged.
Pre-Christmas parties.
Gossip and all that sort of thing.
Christmas crackers,
Yeah.
And obviously the Christmas period lasted right up until Candlemas in the medieval times. It was a long, long period. So this is going into February of 1141.
God, they know how to party, don't they? Jeez.
You know, I look at it now and I much prefer medieval Christmas.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Much prefer it.
Just a whole few months off just to relax. Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. They knew how to do their winter festivals.
Yeah.
So just before they are due to leave, so this is late January and then into early February, her husband, the Earl of Chester, he comes to collect his wife and his sister-in-law. And being unarmed and only with three knights, he's permitted into the castle. Obviously, everyone's a little bit more sort of stressed out about what's going on in the area, so the security's been ramped up a little bit, but there's no reason to suspect anything because Ranulf, Earl of Chester, has not declared either way, really.
Right.
You know, he's been behaving himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're meant to come and get his wife and sister-in-law, and he and his three knights overpower the guards.
Right.
Take hold of the gatehouse, keep the gates open long enough for a hidden body of men to come riding over the hill. And they take the castle by force.
Wow.
And how cool is that?
Yeah.
That's pretty baller. Three knights.
Three guys.
And the Earl.
Yeah.
To overpower the whole gatehouse to get an entire horde of men in. And who is he declaring for?
He's not. This is a completely private grievance.
Really? He's just like, no one is going to diss me at the moment.
Nope.
I will just take... He just doesn't like these guys.
No. It's more... he feels he has a right to Lincoln Castle through his mother.
Yeah.
And he feels really disinherited by what Stephen's been doing. Remember, Stephen's been handing out random things.
I see,
And also a lot of things in Carlisle, I believe, were the Earl of Chester's. And of course, that's now gone to Scotland.
Right.
So he's feeling a little bit put out. So he goes, I deserve myself a little Christmas present. So he goes to Lincoln and he takes it.
Wow. And he's just thinking, they're not going to bother with me. I've got no...
I think he's probably thinking they've got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
I'll just sit pretty here and
smash and grab, basically.
Wow. And it works.
It does, up to a point, but the locals aren't happy. in Lincoln. So they actually go
it's
to...
It's Christmas, you can't do this.
So they go to King Stephen and they say, you know, obviously everything's been disrupted now. Can you come and sort this out? Obviously Stephen's not happy.
Yeah.
So he marches down to lay siege to Lincoln Castle. Mm-hmm. Ranulph Scarpers.
Right.
Bear in mind, he leaves the men. He leaves his knights.
He just leaves himself.
He leaves himself. He leaves his wife and his sister-in-law.
Oh my God, what a prick.
So he's now still a free agent.
Right.
And whilst his motivations were clearly selfish, it gives him almost card in hand. So he goes to Matilda and Robert of Gloucester and goes, look, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Wow.
Because also Lincoln Castle is quite an important place. And there's loads of battles of Lincoln in later history as well. Mm. So Lincoln is, it's if you look at it on a map, it's a real hinge point.
Yeah.
In the, it's kind of on the hip of England a little bit.
Yeah,
can go up and down. It's like the Chester of the east side,
yes,
a bit further down. So it's a huge pawn that he can decide who he can send it to.
Right. And so now he's been formally attacked by one side. He then flees to the other side.
Yes. He also points out that Robert of Gloucester's daughter is in the castle.
Wow.
Because Robert of Gloucester is his father-in-law.
Okay, so he was always kind of on that side.
No, like Ranulph. He just plays the game all the way through.
Yeah.
He never really belongs to any team.
He's just, he knows how to play one side against each other.
He's a bit of a little finger in that. Like,
he's gaining power.
Yeah. He's constantly back and forth all the way through.
And it's hilarious that he's a lot of this is because he then just lost a bunch of stuff in Carlisle because of Stephen.
Stephen's decisions make this whole thing worse.
Mm.
The gravy train he brings over when he first becomes king, then he really pisses off both the Robert of Gloucester and then also the Earl of Chester, two really powerful magnates.
Yeah.
And both of those decisions go against him hugely.
Mm.
If he'd just been slightly more careful about the places he was trampling over, he would have not had this issue.
Would have been fine.
I get quite annoyed about Stephen's antics. He could have so easily.
It's his to lose at this point, and I feel like he is losing it massively. Because it doesn't seem like Matilda's done much. She's there and letting him fail.
Letting him flail about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got.
As Napoleon famously said, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake.
It's
exactly what he's doing here. Just let Stephen be an idiot, and then I'll come in at the end.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah.
So, Ranulph just knocks up at the door, you know, and oh, here you go, perfect solution. Because the Lincoln Castle is still technically under Ranulph's control because his men are representing him there.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert of Gloucester, whole lot of troops, including a lot of Welsh troops actually at this point.
Oh, so they've got Wales as well, kind of on hand.
Exactly. So, you know, it's growing. One of those coin minting bases was Cardiff.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So they obviously are, you know, reaching out and making more friends.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Ranulph's men in the castle, you've got Stephen outside of the castle, and then you've got Robert and Ranulph coming over the hill with their troops.
To relieve them and to fight them off. So this is kind of like the spark. This is the inciting incident.
And it's cold war to hot war.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And it's just some random tiny little... I mean, that's all like these big wars. It's like World War One,
like,
isn't it?
Serbian shooting an arse cheek.
Exactly. It's just this tiny little spark. And then both sides immediately pick one side in this small conflict.
Yeah.
And then it all fights off.
Dominoes go.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So is it a battle?
There is. And Stephen, of course, is stuck in a rock between a rock and a hard place. Sorry. And he actually ends up being captured.
Oh.
So Robert,
this feels like it should be over now.
The end. Happily ever after.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert's got him. And he takes him and puts him in Bristol Castle. First, he has quite a nice bit of liberty. And then Robert gets a bit sketchy about that. It's said he's put in chains. But almost without lifting a finger, Matilda's rival is out of the picture.
And I wonder if there's a certain amount, like, being a woman, it's good to have, like, Robert as almost like an attack dog to do these more aggressive things, you know, put an anointed king in chains, but she's kind of a bit separate from that. And I wonder if there'll probably be loads of kind of misogyny in the way that people expect her to act over a man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's like just like nowadays, like women have to be more serene,
demure,
can't be seen getting their hands dirty. So she's got Robert to do all that work for her, where Stephen has to be aggressive to show he's manly.
Exactly.
Where she's just kind of just like letting things happen, let Stephen flare about, and then let a rival of his, Robert, do her dirty work and get rid of him. Seems like she's won. But I assume there's more to this story.
Do tell us what happens next, Jess.
So Matilda, Yes, she's got to be demure. Yes, she's got to be feminine. She can't possibly be a knight, which is one of the sort of the prerequisites for being noble and kingly. But she's still got to be powerful.
Yes.
She's still got to
it's
show.
It's a really complicated line she's got to walk, isn't it? Yeah.
It's the same like today. You know, you dress too aggressively as a woman.
You've got to be strong, but not aggressive.
Exactly,
yeah.
That whole... Is it that whole Barbie speech done by America Ferrera?
Yeah,
just, yeah. Bear that in mind.
Yeah.
So she travels on to Winchester.
Okay.
To accept the surrender of the treasury.
Perfect.
So that's one tick.
Got the
royal
money.
Authority done. Yeah, absolutely.
Very important.
Very important. Yeah.
She also gets the support of Bishop Henry of Winchester, so
cool.
Stephen's brother. Let's not forget.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And he's just. Chill.
I think he's just playing the game.
Right, okay.
Quite frankly.
So got the money, got the faith.
Exactly. and he makes this big speech about upholding Henry I's wishes, reminding everybody that a lot of them are where they are today because of Henry I, and they
right.
still owe their allegiance to him, and therefore, by proxy, to Matilda.
What an awful brother. What a squirrely little...
I know. Everyone's just out for their own gains at the end of the day at this point. But he declares Matilda as the Lady of the English. So that's
like that.
Basically her... A prerequisite to being queen.
Mm-hmm.
But the big problem is she will literally be the first woman to rule in her own right.
Yes, so it's a big deal.
It's a big deal. And they don't really know sort of a lot of the language around it either, because the word queen comes from quen, literally meaning wife of the king.
Right, so it doesn't mean ruler at all.
No, so not how we would recognise this day in
right.
any way, shape or form.
Okay.
It's and so new.
That's very interesting.
This is the pinnacle precedent for what future queens will rely on.
And do they still also refer to her as Empress?
Well, she kept the title, so yes.
She's still Empress.
Yeah.
And then Empress is obviously means wife of Emperor. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean ruler in its own right either.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
God, it's complicated.
But you find this around this time and in previous centuries, actually. There's a whole lot of work going on about how many Vikings or Norse or Scandinavian warriors were women. But they took, when they went Viking, they would take male titles. And there are lots of burials which have just been being rediscovered female warriors, because the hip bones, you can tell.
Yeah.
And they thought they'd been buried. It was all the Victorian archaeologists all went.
I hate them so much.
Yeah, oh my God. The number of times it's like, oh yeah, they were buried... Oh, somehow this sword got into this burial with a woman.
If there's a mirror, it must be a woman. It's a sword, it must be a man.
Yeah,
exactly.
When actually it was more like a masculine warrior attribute that could be a man or a woman. It didn't really matter, but the terminology just ends up getting morphed and assumed that must mean...
Yeah, and actually gender studies in that period is fascinating, because it hasn't got... Today's, our slant on it tends to come from Victorian... social politics.
God, works, aren't they?
And a little bit before that. But back then, it was a little bit different. I mean, apart from the queen stuff, below that, it was like, especially in Scandinavia, there were thousands of women who were fighting for, you know, were fighting like with alongside the men. But you just didn't see it. So anyway, just on this, though, this is the bit which has been lacking in terms of this has never happened before.
No.
The only people who you could possibly turn to is Æthelflæd, and then... way back,
Boudicca,
they wouldn't have known about her.
Only through the Roman lens, but also Boudicca and Cartamandua.
Oh yes, Cartamandua. Yeah.
So you've got two queens, but they are actual queens in their own rights.
Mm.
You know, yes, Boudicca was married to Prosutagos, but you take Cartamandua; she was completely ruling on her own. But the only problem is we have it's all through the Roman lens, and they apply their opinions of them. So that's what's then filtering down through.
Yes,
which isn't necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
So the precedence, obviously, it's there. You know, women can rule. But, you know, when a male historian goes to write about it, you know, from the opposite side of the fence...
They will edit it and amend it. And
100%.
Yeah. I mean, it speaks volumes that the first Queen Regnant that we have in England is Mary I.
Wow.
In the Tudor period.
Yeah. What was it? 1552?
Yeah.
1553, I think she was. Wasn't she?
Yeah.
I mean, we're obviously glancing over the very tragic figure of Lady Jane Grey.
The 9 Day Queen.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's how long it takes. But in 1141, you have got Matilda lording it around Winchester and then London.
Yeah.
But you've got an anointed king out there.
Yes.
And that's the big thing.
Problem.
He
has
been touched by that holy oil. He is there. He is a good candidate. He's, you know, he's got a lot of good qualities. So
yeah,
it doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to get all the support that she thinks she's going to get.
Right. But he's been useless, so.
And also, you've kind of got the turnaround here, where when Stephen had her at Arundel Castle,
mm-hmm.
but not really, now she's got his problem, because she has an anointed king in chains. But what do you do with him?
Yes.
Can you kill him?
Yeah.
What do you do? He's there. He's alive. He's been God's anointed. You start killing kings, and everything goes to shit. Mm. You can't start killing the top.
And he is anointed. So yeah, so she's got the king in chains. She's got the money.
Mm-hmm.
She's got Bishop of Winchester on her side. Yep. Assume she's now heading to London.
Absolutely. Yeah, she's heading to London to be crowned.
That's
what she fully expects.
Okay.
And in the meantime, Stephen's wife Matilde, so she is not part of any of anything to do with the Battle of Lincoln. So she's out of it, and she's a little bit more capable than her spouse, should we say?
Right.
She goes down to Kent, sort of shores up in there, and is reaching out to Matilda and Robert of Gloucester and entreating them to release Stephen. And I don't know quite what the argument would have been, whether they'd have sort of retired to Europe, to the Mediterranean or something. But
we'll get
she,
out of your hair.
Yeah, there's a lot of, again, Victorian perceptions of her, you know, sort of on her knees in front of Matilda and begging for her beloved husband to be returned. But in truth, they never actually sort of met to talk about it.
Right, okay.
But probably, predictably, Matilda declines to release him at this moment in time. And she hasn't got the crown on her head yet. She's not been anointed. So, you know, who knows? I think it's probably best to keep him safe in Bristol Castle.
Mm-hmm.
So she just makes her way to London. She does start lording it about a little bit.
Yeah, well, you would. It seems like she's won, arguably.
She's probably overcompensating as well and trying to sort of show that she is a powerful person, just like her father was, just like her grandfather was.
Yes, yes.
Very similar to her grandfather, she's had to come over from Normandy.
Ah, yes.
Exactly.
That's a good story, actually. Yeah. I like that.
So obviously William had to come over and put Harold in his place because Harold, he claimed, had sworn fealty to William.
Yes.
The Conqueror. And obviously the same has happened to Matilda. She's, you know, Stephen's sworn fealty to her.
Matilda
he's
the
gone
Conqueror.
In. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. That's what she's going for.
Yeah.
Love that.
But pride always comes before a fall.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it feels bizarre that this isn't her winning, because it just seems like she's got everything. But I guess not.
I think slip-ups run in the family. Because again, she then annoys Bishop Henry.
Right.
He's literally trying to secure the inheritance, not necessarily the crown, but inheritance of Stephen's son, Eustace, who's 11 years old at this point.
Ah, okay.
And he tries to get a lot of the lands conferred onto him, and Matilda's having none of it, quite frankly. She won't even entertain a conversation about him. So Bishop Henry's not particularly happy at this point, probably reconsidering his actions. But in the meantime, Matilda of Boulogne is gathering forces, and she's not going to hang around and wait for this to happen. She's not going to let that coronation take place.
Right, okay.
So on 24th of June, 1141, Matilda and her supporters, they sit down to dinner in Westminster.
Right.
And they're just
Matilda.
Sorry, yes. Oh, God. Yeah, I've stopped talking about Matilda. And I say, Matilda, our Empress Matilda.
Yeah.
Is sitting down. They're just about to cut into their lovely meal, which is presented to them. And the bells of London start ringing out.
Ooh, okay.
And they know some shit's going down, basically. Yeah. And Matilda of Boulogne has raised a force, marched from Kent, and has convinced the burgesses of London to support her and her husband.
Wow. God, she's great. God, her husband's useless.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Most of this story is men failing and their wives doing more work.
Yeah. Like, as soon as basically, so Stephen's side is useless until he's put away and stops being in charge and his wife takes over, and then they start making good moves.
Exactly.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah. I mean, she's also got a bit of a foothold because there's actually a garrison at Windsor Castle who are very anti our Matilda.
Right.
And she's like, I'll deal with them later. But of course, she's got a foothold. She's got Windsor Castle.
Mm.
So Matilda and her supporters have to leave Westminster so quickly that it's said that when the Londoners actually stormed into Westminster, the food was still warm on the plates.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
God, so they really get the hell out of there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They know a bit, they do not have any confidence that they can hold the city, that they can fight at all. They're like, we need to get out of
London
here.
London is against them at this point.
Wow.
Yeah.
And actually, this becomes a bit of a trope in English politics over the next 3 or 4 centuries. If London doesn't like you, everything goes wrong. It happens again in the War of the Roses.
you need London to support you because you, that's your base, and if they revolt,
then
and you can't, I guess you can't force London into submission. It's too big, it's too many people,
there's too much financial interest.
Yeah. You need them on side.
Yeah.
Interesting. And she doesn't. And she doesn't for any reason, or is it just Mathilde's really good at like whipping up support for her?
Mathilde is Countess of Boulogne. Okay. So she actually has control of a lot of the trade routes between London and the continent.
She's powerful. Yeah. Okay.
But also everything we've mentioned about our Mathilde, you know, she hasn't been in England for very long.
Yes.
She's practically a foreigner. She is married to an Angevin, you know, so...
She's not a good look.
No.
Right.
No, unfortunately not. No, the PR wasn't there.
Mm.
Yeah.
See, that maybe... And maybe that's the problem Henry made, is that he made Mathilde his heir, but didn't give her enough PR to become a good heir. Like, she needed to be in England, she needed to be the heir apparent, she needed to be, you know, making moves, she needs to be there to gain her own support. Whereas he was like, no, I've forced everyone to swear allegiance to her, I've said it she should be my heir, that'll be enough.
But this is the thing, that's why the White Ship disaster is such an important part of this story, is that he'd already married her off to the Holy Roman Emperor.
So he's
like, right, that's where you're going. You're going to be German from now on. Well, not German, but in that area. So then he's having to redefine, after the White Ship disaster, what the hell am I going to do? She's already been she's been branded. And so it's now rebranding her to go the other way. It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So she's on the run.
She is on the run.
Mathilde takes over.
Yeah, and London. She doesn't just stop at London.
Wow.
No, so...
She's brilliant. She should be queen. Like... I mean, maybe this is why Stephen should be king, because then Stephen can just go away and, like, Mathilde can just rule in his name. She seems brilliant.
So our Mathilde heads naturally to Winchester to try and protect the royal treasury, and Mathilde just follows her.
Really?
Yeah, and just routs her, basically.
Oh, my God.
It's so much chaos. They haven't got time to do anything. And there is a sort of a half-hearted siege, but even though they go, oh, no, we can't possibly hold out against this.
Yeah.
So our Mathilde then rushes off to Oxford, to a much more sort of strong
Oxford,
power base
strong
for
and
her.
Stable. Yeah, yeah.
However, in the chaos, it's not until she reaches Oxford that she learns that her main ally, her main advocate, Robert of Gloucester, has been captured.
No, has been captured?
He's been captured.
By Mathilde? Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, no one saw Mathilde coming.
No.
No one did.
Again, oh, little woman in Kent. She won't be doing anything.
She's phenomenal.
Formidable. Like, yeah.
That is incredible. Mm-hmm. Is she older than Mathilde?
No, I believe she's younger, because her mum was the younger sister of Mathilde's mother.
Right.
Yeah.
God, she's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And she's completely taken over. And so by capturing Gloucester, she's then freed her husband.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? So, you know, you've still got Mathilde out there.
Yeah.
And you've got, obviously, Stephen in Robert of Gloucester's castle of Bristol.
Right.
So, you know, what the hell does Mathilde think, and what's she going to do?
Yeah.
You know, what would she do? You know, she's lost one of her main allies, but she's certainly by no means lost all of her supporters.
No.
But yeah, you're right.
Stephen's back.
They swap.
Oh, yeah. That's insane. I mean, if anything, that's worse for Mathilde's campaign, because now Stephen has to take charge and start ordering. Like, she was probably doing quite well without his influence.
Yeah.
Like, if he could have just stayed away and then only come back in when she won, that probably would have been better.
Yeah.
But now Stephen's back, assumably takes full control over, and now is now heading for... Our Mathilde?
Yeah, he has a bit of a scare. He almost dies at one point.
Oh.
He falls very, very ill. So, you know, Mathilde could easily have then become regent for her son Eustace and kept the power.
Wow.
Of course, she's got sons that she's fighting for as well
by
this point.
Mathilde should have just offed her husband.
But he miraculously gets better.
Okay.
Now, Robert of Gloucester has made his way back to our Mathilde, but she immediately sends him off to Normandy and says, go and see my husband Geoffrey. Go and raise some more troops. We need more support. We need more numbers, basically, in order to break this.
Like, she's had a big army the whole time.
No.
It seems like, yeah, like
she's been basically using soft power, which was a woman's more likely route to success, because you can't be that brutal dictator that you can be as a man.
I mean, Mathilde can. Mathilde's gone like, I've got hard power.
But Mathilde isn't going. She's not the anointed one.
She's doing it on behalf of her husband,
exactly.
So she can do this.
She can be brat.
Yeah.
whereas yeah. Matilda has to be demure.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's an important play. So yeah. So then Plantagenet's power can possibly help her in this.
Yeah, but he's right. being really petty because he won't send her anything unless Robert goes to sort of parley in person.
Oh my God.
I think is really suspect, actually.
Yes.
Because as soon as Robert's out of the country, Stephen senses an opportunity. And he descends on Oxford and besieges Oxford Castle with Matilda inside.
Right.
For 3 months.
Okay. So, and Gloucester's over in Normandy trying to get Jeff to pull his finger out and actually do something.
Yeah.
Why isn't he in England? Why isn't he with his wife?
We'll come back to that in a bit. But he's literally shoring up her.
Oh, so he's doing stuff.
He is doing stuff. Right, he is doing stuff. And there's a question about whether it's for Matilda or for their sons, quite honestly.
God, these Plantagenets just there. I now get the dislike.
Just men in general in this period. It's just such a...
They're just useless. Yeah,
they are. But then this is where the walkthrough came in.
Yes. Mm. So besieging for 3 months.
Yes, and it's getting pretty desperate.
Yeah.
So it's again, it all looks like it's a done deal.
Mm.
And then the river freezes one night.
Perfect.
So Matilda and literally a small handful of knights escape over the frozen river. And there's a very romantic story about her being lowered in a bedsheet over the rampart walls.
Nice.
But most people are quite sensible and go, why would you bother with that when there's a perfectly functional postern gate out onto the riverbank?
That also makes it sound more feminine to be lowered by her knights and stuff. Yes. It sounds,
it's chivalrous. It's all post. You've got to remember how this is coming down to us. It's through the lens of romance. Yeah.
At this point in time, everyone just takes a bit of a breather.
I mean, such a shift in fates to now be fleeing her castle with only a few knights to her name. Like, and at that point, it then feels like she has no more power bases at all because Gloucester's gone. She's now had to flee with a tiny number. She's now on the run. Her power base is in Normandy. Like, it's not going well.
Well, happily, because Robert of Gloucester's been released, the southwest is actually back to her again.
Right, okay.
She makes it to Wallingford Castle, which has always been very pro-Team Matilda.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, she manages to... They get horses and they carry on down to the southwest. So everything kind of goes back to how it started.
Oh, great.
In 1139.
Neither of them can deal the killing blow.
No. So this is when we go back to Normandy and see what Geoffrey's been up to.
Right, okay. Come on, Jeff.
He's actually been doing pretty well.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. So he's been campaigning throughout Normandy to...
Campaigning, yeah.
I mean, he has actually been doing some stuff.
Shaking hands, kissing babies.
Yes, literally, yeah.
Yeah.
So, all to get Normandy on side for Matilda.
Right.
But by this point, their son Henry is 9 years old.
Okay.
And he started already sort of signing official documents.
Ah, I see.
As the rightful heir to the throne of England.
Right. And so, I guess this whole battle this whole war has come up a bit too early, ideally, for Matilda, because actually if her sons were older, it would be a lot easier to supplant her claim because she can kind of tell the story. It's like, it's more for these kids who are, the grandchildren of Henry, the great-grandchildren of William.
Yeah.
Like, they're the claim as opposed to her, but because they're only young. But now 9, they're starting, that's old enough. They're basically men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, she is held power in her own right at the age of 16 years old. So she, I think, fully expects to become Queen of England as her father wanted her to be. And it's not until later she starts really looking at her sons and going, actually, they're probably a lot better because people will follow a man. So Henry is 9. He's actually signing official documents. Henry, son of the daughter of Henry, rightful heir of England and Normandy. She's already being sidelined.
Son of the daughter of Henry.
Yeah.
That's just...
written straight out. It's literally there in the documents.
Yeah. I mean, it's at least she's even vaguely mentioned. He could have been just like Henry, grandchild of Henry.
Yeah.
Her brand is toxic, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
But she's got to fight now for basically her grandson's claim, her son's claim as much as for her own.
Mm. God, it is so interesting, like, comparing her to Matilde, and they both have to rely on the men to be her brand. She can't have a brand of her own.
No.
And actually, Matilde's being almost more successful by the fact that she's not putting herself in the middle of it. She is acting fully on behalf of Stephen, whereas Matilda has to be kind of her own brand entity, and that is just not a very strong brand at this time. Whereas Matilde can get away with and can be really brash because it's not her brand. She's working on behalf of someone else.
Demure brat.
Yeah.
Demure brat, yeah. Love that.
So Jeffrey's main aim in doing this horse campaigning, kissing the baby, shaking the hands, is to reclaim the title of Duke of Normandy,
right,
which currently is with Stephen as King of England.
Ah, okay, right.
So he's trying to claim that in his own right, and he's always sort of said that he will then hand it over to Henry when Henry sort of comes of age, gets his own spurs and what have you.
And that's like this, arguably one of the most important titles to have, other than King of England.
Absolutely.
You want to be Duke of Normandy. Yeah. That's the second power base at the moment. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, so we're having to fast forward a little bit now because it's all a bit stale again, and there's just a lot of, just looking across borders at each other and mild skirmishes, lots of petty grievances. But I just love this story so much. March 1147, Henry turns 14 years old.
Right.
Possibly a little bit frustrated with the lack of progress in England.
He's still in Normandy at this moment.
He's still not Duke of Normandy just yet. But he manages to convince a load of mercenaries that he gathers up to join him on a campaign in England.
Right. Oh, he's just going in there. He's
ready, basically.
Yeah, it's been this kind of Cold War. I'm ready to start this up again. Yeah.
He thinks he's ready.
Yeah. Okay.
He thinks he's ready. And he manages to convince them to come over with him on credit.
Okay.
So there's no actual money changing hands here.
Right. But he's like, I'm going to become king.
Absolutely.
Like, you want to
have a sure bet.
Yeah. I am the prophesied hero to come in and save the day.
When I'm king, all this will be yours, sort of thing. So yes. So they managed to make it to England. It's so badly planned. It's hilarious. But he runs out of money.
Almost immediately,
because he didn't probably have anything to start with in the first place. Eustace, Stephen's son, sees him as quite a threat. So he's then circling him around England, trying to catch up with him.
God, so it's now such a generational battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
And again, cousins against cousins.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, neither of Henry's parents sort of step in and help him. And I just have this image of the lad out in Ibiza having run out of completely all the money.
Mum. He's kind of done it on his like parents' credit without their permission.
Yes,
his pocket money, basically.
Yeah. But no, not even his pocket money. His potential pocket money.
Yeah.
It's even worse.
Okay. So what do you think he does next?
Who knows? He's a 15-year-old kid. He's an idiot, so he could do anything.
He only goes and asks Stephen for the money to get home.
The guy he's going to be fighting.
his parents' cousin, who he's just kind of gone to war with, and he's like, can I have some money?
Yes.
Okay. Does he think this is just a game, I guess?
I don't know what he's doing.
No.
That's the weirdest move ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
It gets weirder.
Okay.
Stephen gives him the money.
I think he just wants him out of the kingdom. He's like, you're being annoying.
Oh, I guess. So is it kind of maybe a ransom? Or not a ransom, like a threat. Like, pay me off. It's like, I've now invaded. I could do damage. Pay me off and I'll go away.
I mean, there's no guarantee the mercenaries are still with him at this point because there's been clearly no money, you know, no actual spoils of war.
What a weird little...
So, yeah.
Like, invasion.
So,
okay.
March he goes over. By May, he's back. He's back safe. However, this random event really impresses the English nobility.
Oh, okay.
And they sort of go, gosh, what a thrusting young man. Isn't that wonderful?
This is what impresses them.
Yes, exactly.
Invading with no money and then having to get your enemy to pay your bills to go back.
Clever.
The English nobility are easily pleased.
Yeah, it's such a low bar for men to do well.
Yeah, and the fact that all these women are doing so
doing
much more with
failing
so much
upwards.
Less.
Yeah. He's failing upwards.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Anyway, yeah.
So anyway, he's back, he's safe. Everyone loves Henry.
For whatever reason.
For whatever reason. And then Robert of Gloucester dies suddenly and unexpectedly.
Right.
And it's kind of the reaction to Henry's weird little visit to England and losing her main supporter that Matilda suddenly decides, do you know what, enough's enough. Mm. And she leaves England.
Wow. She just says it's not worth it.
She's had enough. No, she's going to support her son's claim to the throne now. She will not claim it in her own right.
Wow. I mean, makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Biden stepping away.
Exactly. I was just hoping you'd say that.
It's exactly like that. It's just, I mean, I wonder how much convincing it took or whether she decided this is not worth it.
Yeah.
Losing Gloucester as well, that's a big blow. Let the new blood get in there. Yeah. Especially, and now Stephen's this old I mean, yeah. They're not. None of them are that old at this point. But he's the baggage. He's he's the old. He's the one who's been causing all this damage to the country.
Yeah.
Henry's new. He's fit. He's cool. He's suave. Mm. He's somehow won an invasion. And he's done something well. So he's like he's the new brand. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. And again, like you say, the Biden Trump sort of comparison. Yeah. It's that fresh blood. He wasn't expecting that. He was not expecting that at all. And now he's, you know, rather than going, right, she's a legitimate, she's a woman. Ah, now I've got this young, very popular Stephen young man
looking
coming
forward
in.
To a debate with yes. Matilda. And he had all this planned. He had everything ready. And now it's Henry and all these ideas he had.
Exactly.
It's ruined. Yeah.
Exactly. It's so yes. Yeah, she goes off to Normandy and stays there and to consolidate Henry's power and to support and give him advice whilst he's planning on taking over England and claiming his birthright. In 1151, Geoffrey Plantagenet does die.
Right.
He has given the Duchy of Normandy already to Henry.
Right.
But now it's almost mainly official. Mm-hmm. And alongside the fact that he's the Duke of Normandy, with Geoffrey's death, he also has the Count of... He also becomes, sorry, the Count of Maine and Anjou.
Right, okay.
So these three really big regions
He's very powerful now, right.
And then he absolutely solidifies this by marrying the next year the lovely Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Oh, wow!
Yeah,
brings in Aquitaine.
Yeah!
Well, not quite yet. Or has this already happened? Is she already the...
Yeah, I believe she's already... Yeah, because of course the King of France was not a happy bunny.
No.
Wow!
So that's like the whole left-hand flank of France
is
now under his control.
Wow.
Yeah.
From the Pyrenees to the Channel.
God, so he's really looking good at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's got money, finally.
He can finally pay off his debts.
He's got money. So it's the same year, 1152, that Stephen really starts recognising him as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And his response to this was to try and get the bishops to crown his son Eustace alongside him.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was by no means guaranteed that Eustace would have just naturally become the king.
Yes, because there's so much doubt. I mean, at this time, so Stephen, in this kind of downtime, Stephen's essentially just King of England.
Yes.
Like it's kind of the war has been put off because Matilda's left. Henry's in Normandy, like gaining power, but he hasn't. It's not a current war inside.
There's still loads of little things going on because you've still got sort of Matilda and Henry supporters in the southwest.
Oh, so it's almost like, their king is over the water.
Yeah.
That whole thing. Like they are rebelling in his
absolutely.
Name.
Yeah.
And now they can rebel in his name, not her name. Exactly. So they're probably a bit more emboldened.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Stephen is effectively King of England, but a very weak King of England.
Yeah.
And now Henry is just away. He's fit. He's ready. He's got a fit new wife. He's got all this power.
Mm.
I like this guy. I quite like him. I think that's quite a bold move to invade England with no money and then get your enemy to pay you off. Like, it's pretty baller. Yeah.
I think that's why everyone just loved him so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, this is working. Now I get all those English nobles. I'm now on their side. I'm like, I understand this guy. He's great.
So another blow to Stephen was the bishops actually flatly refused to crown Eustace.
Right, okay.
Flatly refuse. And the popes finally put his foot down. It's a different pope.
Right.
But he's finally put his foot down.
Yes.
And said, absolutely not. There's no going to be crowning. They've got to sort this out amongst themselves.
Mm.
So what Stephen does is he gets everybody to swear an oath of fealty to Eustace.
Sound familiar?
Wow. Mm. Worked last time.
Eustace.
Yeah. But he still pushes for the crowning because, of course, he knows that an oath means nothing.
Yeah.
To quote George Martin, words are wind.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Man. So, and he thought it didn't work last time, so maybe I can get it to work.
Yeah.
Well, he's running out of options, really.
I guess that is the only thing you can do. And I guess it's just trying to stack the deck and do as many things as he can to get Eustace into power. Yeah. And I guess Eustace isn't as cool as Henry. He's not got like all this power. He didn't invade England.
Eustace, I'm pretty sure, from what I remember, is a little shit.
Oh, really?
He's horrible.
Oh.
He really is horrible.
He's the Joffrey of this story.
Yeah.
But he does have a lot of power. He does have a lot of lands and a lot of support as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's just not. He is. We'll see later. He is the bad guy in this story.
Right.
Really
okay.
Is.
Yeah.
Stephen then has another blow. It's just really going from bad to worse. Mm-hmm. And his main supporter, his main advocate, Matilde, she passes away.
The real power behind the throne.
Yeah.
He's in trouble.
Yeah.
He is.
So. That's literally a few weeks after he's been told that the bishops are not going to crown.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's obviously not a very happy bunny. And then in January 1153, with Matilda, our Matilda staying in Normandy as regent for him, Henry arrives in England with fresh troops.
So and he's... paid.
Yes.
Paid troops. Yes. Yeah. Big deal.
There are contracts in place. Perfect. The unions are happy.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got supplies. They're ready. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And by this point, yes, there must be like a fresh resurgence for a lot of the supporters, but by this point, everyone's just bloody exhausted.
This war has been going on. So how many years has this war been going
so
on?
So we
now?
Start. So technically, we would argue we started in 1139.
Yeah.
Even though the succession crisis means it started in 1135.
Sure.
We are now 1153.
Oh my god!
And in medieval speak, that's cross generations. That's because people die so young. So this is a massive deal.
Man, yeah. So people are exhausted.
Yeah.
Which this is quite common. People like this huge like. Many years war happens and then it ends with someone coming off over the water who people are like, just let him win. I'm just sick of this. Let's just go with Henry. It's worked for us. Oh, it worked for us in the future. But like, you know, let's just stick with someone because this is all too much.
There's absolutely no peace at the moment. There's no sort of rolling over from Stephen's camp at all. Yeah. And, you know, in the meantime as well, you've got to think there's been all this tension, all this chaos for so long, things from the minting of coins right down to the harvest, completely disrupted. So there's widespread famine as well as...
Oh my God.
All this, the poor, like, just normal people are just going, oh, enough already. We just want to harvest some crops to get us through winter, for crying out loud.
Can you imagine, like, trying to buy crops that you can't really afford and you're like, oh, you're using the wrong coins. We need Matilda coins. Yeah. Like, next farm over, they might take Stephen coins, but the exchange rate's a bit off, and so we're not really sure. Those are also different Matilda coins. Yeah. That's confusing. So, like, chaos,
And I say it doesn't end. Henry and Stephen are sort of circling each other around England. They do face off. Mm-hmm. In pouring rain across a river in Malmesbury.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happens.
They just stare
at each other basically for a bit, and then Stephen goes, you know what, I'm absolutely soaked through, I'm leaving. And at that point more people go, yeah, I think we're going to go for Henry.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he blinks.
Yeah.
He's essentially, they square up and then he goes.
So Stephen gets cross, he goes and lays siege to Wallingford Castle, who of course has been stout Team Matilda all the way through. And Henry comes down with his troops to try and relieve the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And this massive pitched battle looks likely. And basically, all the nobles go, no.
Love that. They just decide not worth it.
No.
We've had enough.
So the churchmen get involved and have far more eloquent arguments, shall we say, than just the nobles going, no, we're not doing this. And they basically drop a Treaty of Wallingford,
mm-hmm.
whereby Stephen recognises Henry as his heir.
Ah, okay, right. Yeah. Goodbye, Eustace.
Yeah, not poor Eustace. Mm. When Stephen dies, the crown will go to Henry.
Right,
who will become Henry the Second.
Right.
So naturally, Eustace isn't particularly pleased about this.
No.
And he goes off to try and gather a lot of support to sort of fight for his claim.
Oh, God, now against his dad.
Oh, yeah, and Henry. He's an adoptive brother. He's
the third party now.
He goes and throws a massive tantrum through Cambridgeshire.
Mm-hmm.
He completely sacks the Abbey of Bury St. Edmunds.
Ugh.
He devastates the countryside for miles around. Like, he is properly throwing his toys at the pram and devastating the lives of ordinary people.
Right.
But it's okay, because he dies.
Good. I shouldn't be happy about people dying, but he sounds awful.
He just dies.
It also sounds like that's quite good PR for Henry. That's his main rival. If Stephen's chosen him, his main rival is now completely ruining his reputation and then dies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the Treaty of Wallingford is completely ratified and made formal but in the Treaty of Winchester.
Love it.
So they go to the cathedral there. They share the kiss of peace. All hostages are released. All mercenaries are sent home.
Mm.
Stephen recognises Henry as his adoptive son and heir.
Wow.
Stephen does have one remaining son.
Oh, okay, right.
William. Very sensibly renounces his claim to the throne.
He just quietly goes, not worth it.
No.
Wow.
So it's all agreed.
Okay. He is the hero of this entire story. He's just the one went, nah, I'll just go away.
Yeah. It's just not worth it.
No. It's not worth it. No. Love that.
So he does, he gets out of it very well. He's been given a lot of lands. His inheritance is made safe. so long as he doesn't lay claim to the throne of England.
Perfect. So, what a guy.
Yeah. And that's what happens.
That is the end.
That is pretty much it. So Stephen dies October 1154, so less than a year after they ratified that Treaty of Winchester.
Really?
Yeah.
How does he die?
I think of exhaustion.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
A surfeit of bunny rabbits.
Yeah. I suppose at that point, like, Henry's like, I don't have to kill this guy. Like, it's fine.
No.
Like,
well, he's Duke of Normandy, so he goes back to Normandy. He starts having lots of little babies with Eleanor. That's a whole other story. So he's over in Normandy when Stephen passes away.
Oh, so he says, I am your heir, but I'll let you rule for a little bit longer. Yeah. You stay there.
There was this whole agreement between castles would be held in Henry's name, but Stephen would have access to them while he was king.
Right, okay.
It was really well thought out.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So, peace.
Finally, I mean, I don't think Stephen knew maybe more than 18 months of actual peace during his reign all that time.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, was it worth it, really? Henry's crowned at Westminster on 19th of December, 1154. And it's worth noting that this is the first time since Edward the Confessor that a succession has not caused a mad scramble for the crown, the throne, the treasury.
Right.
It's all gone smoothly. It's dignified.
Well, they were sick of it by then.
Yeah.
Just like,
this is the first time.
Just go with him.
Absolutely. But yeah, Matilda, she remains an advisory role for Henry. She sometimes acts as regent in Normandy.
Oh, good.
And she passes away in 1167, age 65 years old.
What a life.
Yeah.
What a life.
Yes.
And one. Like, I know she didn't become queen,
no.
but she got her son on there, which is kind of the important part. Yeah. She gets her line on there.
So because she did that, every king since, every king, queen, monarch since, has been related to her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Not Stephen.
No.
No, Stephen becomes... No one really remembers King Stephen.
No. He's a failed king.
Yeah, there is no Stephen II. There is just Stephen.
No. Absolutely. That's interesting, yeah, because I guess his name is worthless in English history.
It's like John. There's never going to be a John II.
I mean, there wasn't another Matilda, like another Queen Matilda. Did they keep the name?
That hasn't come back.
We didn't use any other Matildas.
No, there aren't any other...
There will be... I think presumably were daughters called Matilda.
There were loads. Yeah, absolutely loads.
I mean, clearly it was already a very popular name,
yes.
so...
Yeah.
So they would keep it going. Wow. Very interesting. And then, because... Just getting the time right. So, because Matilda died long before this deal was made.
Only
cut
about
her
a year.
Out.
Yeah, only
oh,
about
really?
A year.
Because presumably if she was there, she wouldn't have been happy with it and maybe was powerful enough to get in the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really, Stephen was useless on his own. Like, as soon as he lost her... He then lost, he seems like he lost the will to live, he could no longer fight, he cut his own son out of the, I mean, maybe he didn't like his son, to be honest, so maybe it was all okay.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. What a tale.
What a tale. And what a story about, like, strong women, like, really taking control, and a bunch of useless men who really just got in the way. Like, I love Matilda. I think she might be my favourite, although I like Matilda a lot as well. Like, you know, there's a certain amount of, you know, her pressing her claim did get a lot of people killed. And I guess that you could say the same thing for Matilda as well. But she is fighting on behalf of her husband and is... Yeah, it's a fantastic story.
It really is.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for bringing it
thank
to
you
our
so
attention.
Much.
Thank
that
you
was
so
really
much for
told.
Having me.
Yeah.
It has
really,
been a
really
pleasure
fun.
To have you. And hopefully we'll have you back on for a future episode.
Yeah. I would love to.
Yeah.
Absolutely love to.
Find another very complicated story that you can tell us. I do not think I could tell this story in that succinct way because it's just too complicated, but that was really, really good.
I just absolutely love this period of history. It's bonkers.
Mm.
And it's just everyone's out for each other and then they're switching sides and all these other catalysts are coming through and changing the course of history. And then you say there's so many what ifs.
Yeah, it could have been entirely different. It's just like a whole different series. All like from then, our entire royal history completely thrown out of the water if Stephen had been good at his job and had been any better than he was.
Yeah.
Or
100%.
Whatever.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on this tale, guys. And we'll see you again for another fantastic episode.
Yes, thank you very much, Jess. This has been brilliant.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, and we will see you next month.
Sounds good. See you guys.
See ya.
Bye.